You're listening to The Obscure Gentleman, a weekly pop culture nostalgia podcast. I'm your host, Aaron A. Alvarez.
And I'm your co-host, Alex Mitchell.
Yeah, I don't really know where to go with that.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, this is the show.
I'm going in. Cover me, Porpoise.
I'm right with you, Red Green.
But I don't want to be a pirate.
Looks like Daddy's bringing home the barbecue.
These donuts are great.
I'd buy that.
Dodson, we've got Dodson here.
You don't know what hard times are, Daddy.
All we had to do was follow the damn train, CJ.
It was me all along, Austin.
No! No!
Yeah. It's the eighth studio album from American thrash metal band Megadeth.
Of course.
It was released on August 31st, 1999 by Capitol Records, the band's last album to be released by that label. It's not an album that people like, but no, we're not talking about.
I was wondering how long you're gonna go. This is considered to be, I think, the first non-linear like board game
where it's not just like
you going in a lane like Candyland or Monopoly.
Yeah, or one of those just simple like the chess style games where it's like knock this out. This is more of a
strategy game.
It's an RTS before RTSs were a thing, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. Most RTSs are kind of based on this.
Yeah, this is basically the grandfather of RTSs then, I guess.
Yeah.
By the way, RTS is real-time strategy.
Yes. StarCraft,
it's those computer games people look at or video games in general that like people say, you're not doing anything. You're just making the troops move around.
Command and Conquer.
Yeah, it's one of those. I mean, they're popular with the crowd, that. But, so this is... it's a basic setup. You know, you've probably seen this in so many, like, movies and television shows. And, like, think of a map of the world, basically.
And then you have little, like, pieces all over it representing, like... it's basically that. You move your guys around.
Yeah, imagine you're a war general, basically, in a tent.
That is what this thing is.
And the goal is world domination. You're Alexander the Great.
You win when you capture all territories, or if you're playing the European version initially until they introduce us into America.
Which will the special
the side quests, the missions.
Which we'll get into. There's like the thing about Risk is there's so many different versions, there's so many different ways to play it. The traditional American way, I guess, to play it, or North American way to play it, is essentially you have all your troops, you have cards, you have dice, or die, whatever you want to call them, you go out to take over the world. You make, like, if the more players, I think, the better the game. You get to make, like...
because there are two-player Risk games that you can play.
But then when you have more players, when you have at least, like, four, I'd say, is the minimum you should have, you get to make, like...
packs.
Yeah, like
treaties.
It's like you're really... but then, usually what happens is you fuck that person over.
Yeah, or what I've done is, like, once we've conquered everyone, and say, look, we're too powerful, there's no need to let this go on. We both won, and then end the game right
That's,
there.
That's, stalemate?
There's no stalemate, we're allies. We did. We have no...
that's horrible.
Do you think Hitler was going to screw over Japan? Well...
Yeah, most likely. The Nazis were... they used a lot of the
I'm totally convinced that Mussolini was going to get screwed over.
Oh, like, dude. Completely. Dude, Mussolini would have... Mussolini's an embarrassment. Like...
he's...
Look, they're... All the Axis powers were horrible people.
No, but you could at least say, like, okay, this guy is competent. He was crazy, but he was at least doing
Mussolini
shit.
Mussolini was...
yeah, like,
he's a joke of
he's the jobber of... he literally is the jobber of country.
He's very embarrassing. Like, historically looking him up, like, when you read about him, it's like he was just a thug of a man, whereas the others, at least, of the Axis powers... they were more calculated in what they did.
Yeah, and Hirohito was, like, he had, like, deity status to him already,
he's
so that's...
considered a god, yeah.
Yeah, so...
and Hitler wanted to become a god, basically.
We are getting way too political.
I know, I mean, this is part of...
yeah, and you know what, the thing is, when I play with my friends, there's always this weird, like, role-play aspect that comes into it, where they start becoming their own, like...
yeah, I know, because the thing is, you can name, people always name what their armies are.
Yeah, it's fun. We've done this, too, yeah. our friends. Like,
do not play this while intoxicated.
No, and we have like a little party coming up, but I don't want that to happen.
We became, when we played last year, we essentially became the Axis Powers.
But not smart or...
But no, we ended up like the actual Axis Powers ended up.
Oh no, we got destroyed.
No, because I remember we started off pretty smart and we invaded...
England? So yeah, we did start off...
We also invaded like Northern Europe and Southern Europe, and I was like...
Oh
like,
yeah, we're doing it.
We were doing... And I started making jokes about how we were like them and...
And then, yeah.
But then I got too drunk that I...
Our rolls were really bad. So you use your attack dice. There's three red dice. Basically, you attack a nation and you roll. And if you roll better than the defensive roll, I think, then you get to take it over. My rolls were terrible. So
at first, they weren't.
But then slowly, it was like every roll I had was like dog shit.
And the fucking Americans started killing us.
Yeah.
The Americans came into the war.
That's pretty much what did happen, though. I mean, if you want to look back on
we don't want to discount the Russians and, you know.
No, because the problem is we were, like, too spread apart. But anyways, and that's the thing. You want to have a continent. You want to have a continent to call your own.
Yeah.
Because you gain more troops, like, each turn and all that. Like, more, like, bonuses.
Yeah.
So there is a strategy to this game, obviously.
There is strategy.
I watched a few Let's Plays of this game.
Oh my god, yeah. I didn't know there were Let's Plays for board games.
Oh yeah.
But there are.
Yeah. Some of these were not great. Most of them weren't, to be honest.
Because the problem is most people, like, I watched,
here's the thing. When we played it at our party, it was a very quick set up your shit and let's go.
Yeah.
Whereas, like... Most people I've noticed actually tend to think this out a bit more. And
because a lot of Let's Players who are in, like, really into board game culture. And,
they've played this game numerous times.
Researching this episode, I found out a lot about board game culture that was just hilarious. They take this shit so seriously. So when you watch a Let's Play of these games, it's not only tedious, it's boring because it's like, these people are like... Like they're like staring sharply at the board. Yeah, like,
I mean, there were some people that were having fun with it, but you could still tell, like,
yeah,
they were taking it seriously, and then some of them were making racist.
Also, they also have like they're very strict about the game because the thing is, as with most board games, people don't like to really read the rules.
Oh yeah,
like no one ever really plays Monopoly. How you're supposed to play it?
No. Free parking does not exist.
Yeah, like Risk too. Like with Risk, there are rules.
There are rules to war.
But no one actually ever reads the manual.
Yeah.
So you play like the most basic sort of common way to play it.
People don't do the secret missions. At least up here.
But I think that's how we play it. That we play it. Like
the very basic,
way, but we don't. There's like little nuances we don't get into.
Yeah.
That the game is supposed to have. That's why a typical Risk game, not Secret Mission style, which we'll get into, but a typical Risk game usually supposed to last like about 9 hours, 8 to 9 hours.
Yeah, which is funny because the guy that designed this, whose name is Albert Lamaurice.
Yeah. So
he said that this game should take about 90 minutes to play.
But see, that's a different version.
That's the original. So, let's get into this a bit.
So, in 1950, Parker Brothers, they formed an affiliation with the Miro Company in France.
Yes.
The Miro Company made, of course, board games. Yeah. Parker Brothers, at the time, though, was one of the, next to Milton Bradley, one of the largest board game companies.
And we did kind of go into this in our Monopoly episode. Yeah.
So, Parker Brothers, them and the Miro Company in France formed an alliance, and they started manufacturing games and stuff, but it wasn't until 1957 that Albert Lamaurice, and also the less credited Michael I. Levin, while on vacation in Holland, created what was called La Conquête du Monde.
The Conquest of the World.
Yeah, and it was released by Miro in 1957. So then Miro...
Which is a... When you think about it, that title applies more to what we call it.
Yeah, I guess. Because
that's what that game is all about, really.
Yeah, but I guess...
Risk, I mean, you take a risk.
The thing, it's marketing, I guess. It sounds like...
Nicer. It's yeah. easier to say.
And it's... Like, think about all the greatest, like, board games. They're always one word.
Monopoly, Life, Candyland.
Oh, like Candyland is one word, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they're always one word. Like...
Diplomacy.
Like, Mousetrap is two words, but no one cares about Mousetrap.
The only thing about Mousetrap that people ever did, it's they like, set up the freaking Rube Goldberg.
You watch thing, it go, and then you're like, okay.
And then put it away. That's yeah. it. Same thing with 1313 Dead End Drive.
Also, yes.
They just drop that chandelier thing.
Oh, you can get a clue. It's like, all these games yeah. have one word. So,
sorry.
The Albert Lamaurice, I think that's
how you pronounce it. Lamaurice, I don't
Lamaurice.
Know.
Before he was a board game maker,
he's a filmmaker.
Yes, he actually won an Academy Award for his short film "The Red Balloon."
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen it, but apparently it was good enough for an Academy Award.
Enough for me.
So what happened was his game that he created for Miro was gaining a little bit of steam. It hadn't gone like mass manufacture yet or anything, but. In France, it was actually kind of popular. So, Miro, because they were partnered with Parker Brothers...
They brought them this game.
Yeah, and they said, like, hey, we have this game.
Do you want to sell it?
It's doing really yeah. well in our region. And by the way, this isn't all of Europe. This was just in, like, France.
Yeah.
And so they said, yeah, like, sure. we'll test it out. So...
they tweaked it a bit.
So this was 1957.
Yeah.
So, Parker Brothers didn't release Risk until 1959. So what happened in 1958 was essentially... small test markets, what they did is they throughout Europe, not North America, just throughout Europe is when it really started being developed, was from like 57 to 58. And so by when 59 rolled around, that was when they were ready to, okay, this is well yeah. enough. But they had to rename it because Conquest of the World, I guess, it wasn't catchy enough.
And maybe it was just like after war like thoughts and all that. Maybe it's like, let's just have something that sounds a bit risk. It's kind of fun, you know.
Well, it has the tagline, "The Game of Global Domination."
That's true.
So I mean, but again, that's a tagline. But yeah, risk. It's a risk.
Actually, it was called like Risk, like Continental something or other, and then they changed yes, it. Yes,
It did have a other. I mean,
it had a very small little tagline. It wasn't the Continental game
and the board. How it initially looked it was like a blue board,
and there's a happy whale on there.
It's like a weird graphic.
Yeah, actually, they sell this version still.
Oh, had they re-released that one?
Yeah, in 2008, I think they re-released it.
Oh, yeah, it was the anniversary edition.
Yeah,
yeah,
and you could still buy it. I saw it for like $20. It was.
Yeah. So, in 1959...
It uses small wooden blocks as pieces yes. instead of, like,
and
the infantry...
They are colored blocks.
Yeah. It's a very, like, bright-looking game.
And so, when they released it in the United States, it was a little different. They got rid of the more complex parts. They took out the special operations... instructions.
Secret missions were like mostly European.
So yeah, so in Europe, when it launched in Europe, it had everything in it. It had the secret missions to make the game even shorter.
Which, when you think about it, is kind of a good thing.
But see, I guess to the Parker Brothers, they just thought, like, it's more rules. Let's get rid of them.
I guess, yeah.
Because it was streamlined. They wanted to streamline.
And I guess that's had an effect on us because, like, every game I've ever played, no one like wants to do the secret missions.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't even know about secret missions. It's, yeah. It comes as a surprise, like, whoa, what's that?
Yeah. Whereas in Europe, it's like commonly known.
It's so. Because it's a short, fast, fun, easy way to play the game.
I don't know if this is like solely an American thing or not, to be like so ingrained in like this long hour, like, fucking board game that could take weeks even.
It's just because that's the way we grew up with the game. And like, yeah. I mean, it wasn't until the 90s that people found out.
Yeah.
I mean, because things.
Because they updated it and yeah. then they.
There's
they,
no internet.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, the internet's barely starting. Like, but then prior to the 90s, it's like, what are you going to do? It's like, there were probably people like, oh, I got the European edition, like at a trade show or yeah. some shit.
That'd be interesting.
So for pretty much the 60s to the 70s, And through most of the '80s, Risk remained unchanged. You know, the North American one stayed the same. The European one stayed the same. The only thing that really changed was like the box was updated in look.
Yeah.
The board occasionally would have like nicer looking. They'd update the graphics a little bit on the board.
They added more like pieces to be shaped.
Yeah, they changed the shape of the pieces, Roman numerals. Yeah.
To like soldiers.
Yeah, like that. That was it. Cosmetic, purely cosmetic. But in 1986, they decided to experiment. And this is when they released... This is the first official, like, variant of the game. It was called Castle Risk.
Yeah. I've heard numerous people say it's not that great. So but it's an experiment.
It's a map of Europe.
Yes.
You
defend your castle.
Yeah. The problem is it was... Yeah, it was boring for people. Because...
So is this essentially a concept of, like, turtling where you just kind of, like, hole up and you have to just, like... You don't really... attack anyone.
Yeah, it,
yeah, I can see that.
It was just...
This is the Australia thing, where people... Okay, so I don't know if you...
There's a board game people have memes that found out.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, every little subculture or fandom will have its own in-jokes, memes, what have you. So, at least to my understanding, the Australia strategy is just to, like, hole the fuck up all your troops, and then hope that, like... Because there's, like, it's very hard to get to you.
Yeah. So, because, like... And you have to go through New Guinea and Indonesia.
You waste your resources trying to get to you, and then you just, like... Yeah. So...
But it was more of an offensive game than a... No, more of a defensive game than a defensive game. Yeah,
which is, like, not,
and,
you know...
And here's the thing about how most people play Risk. They play it offensively. Yeah. The smart way, technically, is to play it offensively, which no one fucking does. Because people are about crushing their enemies.
Yeah.
That's what people want to do. They want to go in there with full military might and giant penises. And
as you typically do.
And they want to fucking destroy Afghanistan and Mongolia and Ural.
Yeah.
And North Africa and the Congo. I'm looking at the map right now. They really simplify the fuck out of everything. Like, Africa is North Africa, Egypt, East Africa, like, Congo, South Africa, and Madagascar.
Yeah, like, but you know what? Like, that episode of Seinfeld, like, I didn't really think that would be a thing where...
That's, yeah.
Where you, like, would play the game that long. To me, that just seemed crazy. But, like, looking at it now...
People
like,
do that, yeah.
Yeah, now I know.
You say Ukraine is weak.
I want to smash your game. Ukraine is no game.
So, from 1986 on, it's after this failure. I mean, it was only in production until, like, 88.
You know what? Props to them, though, because it would be like trying to change Monopoly.
Which they have.
But they don't really.
The new Circle Edition where that has a credit card, remember?
Yeah, but, like, it's still Monopoly. At the end of the day, that is changing
Monopoly is the ultimate skin game. Like, they reskin that shit constantly.
Yeah, like... We could talk about some of these other reskins
No, but the thing is, Risk is never reskinned. The only time Risk is reskinned is when it's the most basic one, but that's just they update the look and they don't go back to the old one unless it's the anniversary one.
Yeah. So, like...
Every form of Risk that is made is different. Like it has to be different because you're not playing on the United States. But we'll get to that in a bit. So, in 1993... is when special or secret missions Risk came to North America.
Yes,
which was always in Europe. They had been playing this for ages. Players could enjoy shorter missions that would end the game faster.
Yeah,
each player holds cards with stand objectives like control North America, South America, and Australia.
Yeah,
so it's like honestly.
But the thing is like sometimes there's other things where it's like oh like. Make sure Asia is, like, defeated or completely conquered. The stipulation doesn't have to be you do it.
Because the idea of... Because
you could... These secret missions could be done, like, in secret. Like, no one could know your goal.
Also, the idea of secret missions Risk is that what's going on isn't a world war. It's more of, like, here are small little wars
It's happening. Like an espionage kind of thing.
Yeah. Too. But we always want to play World War Edition, which is essentially what the game is. It's just... Yeah. A massive campaign to control the world. So then in 1999, France, because you know, that's where we're originating from, they made 10,000 copies of a Napoleon edition of Risk. And the map on the game is essentially everywhere that Napoleon tried to conquer.
Yeah. Okay, there's like historical context too. That's cool.
Yeah, and But the thing is, it was more like Castle Risk, but it was more well-received because they fixed the mechanics a little bit. And it was so successful in 99 that in 2000 they released an Ottoman Empire version, which was considered an expansion board. I don't know how you do expansion boards on a board game. See,
you can't do that kind of game for us because ours would just be like a fucked up, like, conquest of the continent.
I mean, yeah, like... It would be interesting to see, like, Manifest Destiny Risk.
You could do, like, Civil War Risk.
No, you could, dude, you could totally have Manifest Destiny Risk.
But that, yeah.
Where each tribe. No, each round. Yeah. Each round of Risk, like, after each game, you put, like, a transparency on top or something to be like, okay, now it's, like, 1885 right now. And, like, you advance the...
It just seems like it'd be fucked up.
So no, because then at one point, it would just be you against Spain, like Mexico, Spain, or whatever. Like, it'd be, like, that sort of situation.
Yeah, I guess, but still.
You know, and then the Comancheros come in and they kill... The Comanches kill a lot of Mexicans, which, you know, we don't talk about that, though. We don't talk about how they were wholesale slaughtered by the United States government... Paid Comanches to kill Mexicans in which is now, you know, like Texas and California. Yeah. And, you know, but, you know, we don't talk about that because
Canada's there too, so.
Yes. Fur trappers and beavers and all that shit.
Hey, they burned down the White House.
They did, I guess.
Oh, Risk 20.
Okay. So
2210 AD.
So this is 2001.
Yeah.
When this happens. It's. So basically, this one was. This is what really started the whole idea of, like...
Fantasy, like, a really fantastic, like, kind of...
Or, like, just crazy variants on Risk. So...
But this is, like, this is not a property, a licensed property. This is something they made, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you have, like, it's the future. And it's a fucked up nuclear apocalypse kind of thing.
It has nuclear wastelands, underwater territories, the fucking moon.
Yeah.
There's assault robots, and they're called Machines of Destruction.
Yeah.
And
the cool thing about this was that, like, the rounds were, like, years, right?
Yeah, so it was five rounds. Each round is different years.
And you basically had to, like, capture points and stuff like that.
And that's the difference between this and all the other games.
Yeah, by the end of the game itself, whoever has the most points, like any game, really, whoever has the most points wins. But that's the cool thing is, like, you know this game won't last forever. It's going to end, like, at some point in the night.
And the cool thing is, like, yeah, you could you get to fight on the moon and shit.
Yeah, it's very, like, sci-fi kind of, like...
So here's when it started happening with Risk is, like, this was popular enough that they started, like, saying, hey, we can experiment with other things. And so when you have most games that try to do, like that take other, like, IPs and, like, they're, like...
Yeah, like Pokemon Monopoly.
Well, usually what they do is they just reskin completely, like Checkers has done. Like, almost every, like, game has, like, tested the waters of, like, oh, we're going to... You know, we just put pictures of the characters on the board.
Yeah.
Risk is different because since it's conquest and map-based, you can't have, like, a Lord of the Rings one with the map of, like...
Like the Americas. Our world. Yeah.
So, what they would do is they'd create a whole new game from the ground up. Risk is, like, the only game where every variation of it is a new game. Star Wars, for instance, has a Risk.
Yeah, that they have two of them. And one's a Clone Wars era thing, and then one's like the Battle of Endor.
Well, so when people look at those boards, they're very confused. Like, what is it?
Yeah, because I looked at the.
It doesn't look like what you think of Risk.
I looked at the original trilogy Star Wars Risk. It looks like Vader's TIE Fighter.
Yeah, so it was 2002, 2003, and that's when they released Lord of the Rings Risk, and then Lord of the Rings Trilogy Edition Risk.
Okay.
And this, see. Whereas 2210 AD is what allowed it to, like, them experiment, it was licensing Lord of the Rings that really made them realize, like, oh, shit, like, this is going to be lucrative because those did really fucking well. And so then you get into, like, in 2005-06, Clone Wars Edition because Revenge of the Sith was coming out, and then Original Trilogy Edition came out the following year. The interesting one, though, is 2004, because, like you said, like, 2210 was, like, their own original property. Godstorm came out in 2004.
And I'm assuming that's, like, Pantheon.
So, it's the cultures of the Celts, the Norse, the Greeks, the Egyptians, and the Babylonians.
Oh, cool.
Clash for supremacy of the ancient world. Players invade territories, play miracle cards, sink Atlantis, and conquer the underworld. Now,
so funny thing about that. A friend of a friend of mine invented like this kind of board game called Pantheon.
Yeah.
He never like got it released, which is a shame because it was a really fucking fun game. So it's
basically this.
Kind of, yeah. But the thing is like it had its own rules and shit, and like it wasn't just that. So, like, Steven, if you're listening, try and find out if we can get a copy of that. So, it was really fun.
Here's the crazy thing about when I said conquer the underworld. In this game, when your troops die or whatever, they don't die out. They don't get just taken off the board. You now send them to the underworld, and your troops have to try to take over
the
underworld.
That's cool as shit. I want to play this.
So basically, it's like a second chance of playing, but like now your new task is
conquer the underworld.
And so then you have factions of dead troops trying to take over the underworld.
That's incredible. Is this version still available?
Yeah. Godstorm.
You know what's cool? Like, besides some of these like really like out of print ones, like the Metal Gear Solid version or something like that.
Yes.
And that's crazy that is a a risk. So they tend to be re-releasing the different variants pretty often.
Yeah, and they're usually always in print online or something you can find.
Yeah.
And then so 2008 was when they published their 1959 version.
Yeah. It's just like a reprint essentially, just to kind of give you like a nostalgic taste.
Yeah, I mean, because like, you know, Target also had those Target exclusives,
the big wooden ones,
the book versions. Yeah. I mean, we've seen premium versions of like almost every game. Like Target's done their versions. There's been like these ones that cost thousands of dollars that are made of like the super premium materials.
Yeah, we have a Monopoly version. I talked about this. Yeah. Like it's got a fucking, like, you know, the green felt at casinos and shit. It's got that in there. Like, oh, it's made of wood. Like, oh god,
so
that version's so awesome.
Since 2009, essentially. Because prior to 2009, it was sporadic, these releases. But since 2009, now it's pretty consistent. They just released, like, just different branded IPs of, like, Risk. So they've had Halo Wars.
Halo Trilogy.
Halo Legendary, yeah. StarCraft. They've had several Star Wars editions since then.
There's a Mass Effect version.
The Walking Dead, Battlefield Rogue, Plants vs. Zombies, Doctor Who, Game of Thrones, Marvel Cinematic Universe, Captain America Civil War, Star Trek 50th Anniversary, and on and on.
The 50th Anniversary one sounds kind of cool because the storyline for that is Q.
Apparently it pisses people off, though.
Why?
Apparently it's a very rage-inducing version of Risk.
Really? The storyline is that Q gathers all five captains throughout time and makes them, like, fight for who's the best captain.
Yeah, see,
which is weird, because you think Picard and Sisko would be like, hey, this is
But the game
stupid.
Mechanics apparently piss people off.
Really?
Like they make people get into fights, is from what I understand.
This game is kind of like not Super Smash Brothers, like Mario Party, in the sense that it's funny to me, because Mario Party was meant to, like, hey, gather your friends, have fun. People end up getting really angry with each other. And Super Smash Brothers is a game where you have to fight your friends, but you end up just having more fun with it and not getting as angry.
That's true, I guess, yeah.
This game is, it seems like, yeah, you know, fight your friends, because, and you actually do get
because
angry.
Because you get into a mindset of, I'm taking over the world, don't fuck with me. Like,
yeah.
You start to take on dictator, like,
It's interesting that, you know, especially nowadays, we've always kind of looked down on that kind of attitude, but when it's a board game, it's okay.
Yeah,
you are allowed to become Hitler, essentially.
That's basically what happens, is everyone kind of becomes like Hitler.
They put on a persona of a, not of a fascist, essentially. Yeah.
No, everyone becomes a fascist when they play this game.
Yeah.
Like, everyone becomes a fascist, or they're like, it's almost like Warhammer style.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting to me that there's another game that came out, like, I think 2 years before this, called Diplomacy. And that is not as war-fueled. That actually requires you to, like, you know...
Isn't Wait, are you talking about...
I'm not talking about Axis and Allies.
Oh, wait. Oh, so, like, this is before, like...
This came out, I think, technically before Risk.
Yeah.
It's not a ripoff. Risk is not a ripoff. It's just...
Is this the Hydrox effect?
I don't know. What is that?
Hydrox came first and Oreo copied them, but...
What the fuck? You named your cookie Hydrox?
That was the original Oreo.
Why would you call it that? I wouldn't eat that.
Everything back then was named weird.
Hey, you want some Oreos? Or you want Hydrox?
I mean, Oreos were the bootleg version, basically.
Yeah, right? Now, what are those, like...
They still sell Hydrox.
They do?
Yeah, no one really buys them.
That's sad. I mean, yeah. But, it's not that, because diplomacy is what it is. It is diplomacy, but you can also, go into
battle. Wait, so what is it? Do you conquer the world, or...?
No, you're supposed... You each take on the role of, a country, and then the interesting thing is you write down every action that you do... And then everything gets played at once, and you have to see how you, work on it.
Well,
I would not recommend it to kids. This is more... I don't want to say Risk is a kid's game, but it's easier for kids to, get into it.
There are a lot of these types of games, Conquer type games, Actus and Allies, which I just found
out. I have a list of some of these, actually. You got Empires of the Ancient World, Vinci, Shogun... Conquest of the Empire, Diplomacy. Oh, yeah, Diplomacy gets listed in here. Amoeba Wars, Gnomes Wars, Wizard's Quest, Global War, Armada, Wallenstein, Emperor of China. So, yeah, they all kind of and Axis and Allies, of course. They all kind of
They all have that basic thing.
The basic rule, everyone's game is going to be different, obviously.
Yeah, but Risk is the real, actual...
It's the granddaddy.
So... In 2011, 2012, and 2012, there's a weird history behind it because first it wasn't allowed to be released. They scrapped the release, but then it came out. It got released in small batches, then it came out full. Risk Legacy. it's often debated about whether this is the best version. And there's a faction who thinks this is what Risk was meant to be. Some people say this is, the ultimate version of Risk. Others say it takes away the original intent and fun of Risk. So Risk Legacy, which I found out about just recently, is fucking insane. You want to tell them what it is?
Risk Legacy is interesting because when you play the game, certain rules and things are altered as you play. And then... The thing is, the game itself does not revert back to how it originally starts.
So
you continue with the rules that you set throughout play.
So let me, because it's kind of, okay. So here's
I didn't get to really read some of the crazy stipulations that can happen.
Here's the thing. Every board game ever played always gets reset when you finish it. You play Monopoly.
You don't have, Park Place.
Once you finish Monopoly, all the pieces go back in the box. That's the rules. So Risk Legacy is different. You start off with a clean board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very simple Risk.
You also have to sign a contract.
Yeah, so you...
It's obviously just for fun, but...
But here's how it is. There's a clean board, and it's the world. There's some setup required, so... You officiate your armies, your special sanctioned power, or whatever you have.
Mm-hmm.
And as you play the game, you have to put actual permanent stickers on the board, sign them with titles and your initials, which changes the landscape of the board. And as the game progresses, there are rules that are locked away that are once you break the seal, these rules... get placed in the rulebook over old rules, changing the rules of the game. And so what happens is when one game is finished, one campaign or whatever is finished, the board is changed, the rules in the book are now changed. So when you play the game again, you now have to play a different game with these new rules that... Basically, what this game is trying to do is saying war has consequences.
Yeah.
And here's what happened. So, say you finish a game owning a certain territory, or this territory belongs to this. It stays that way. And so, it's like actual evolution of war happening. From my understanding, you can have a total of 15 campaigns. So, 15 games.
Yeah.
And once that ends... then you can play normal Risk, but on a board that you and your people have created.
Yeah.
It's your own personalized version of Risk that exists nowhere else, because there's so many combinations of different things you could do, and, like, it has territories you create.
I could see how this would, like, bother people who are, like, we don't get to play that often.
Yeah.
So, like, if all of a sudden we invited someone new to play, they would not like that.
No, but because the thing is, all it is to them is, like, they're playing just a new version of Risk.
True, but they're, you know.
But it's like war. It's like war. It's like, now this country's getting involved and they've never, like,
This is a popular game for Risk fans, but I'm also aware that it tends to divide people.
It does, simply because
it goes against the idea of what classic Risk is.
Yeah, but what they're doing with this is they're making it more interactive.
Yeah.
And it freshens it up. Each time you play, it's like you're continuing a story. It's basically making the story.
It is a legacy. That is the point of the title.
Yeah, and so it's interesting to see, like, because I watched a bunch of videos on this, and it's interesting to see that every time the board is brought out, it's like, oh shit, like, we can't take these stickers. These stickers are there to stay. These armies, like, because the other thing is you have these cards that designate what your empire or your army is. And so it changes. So basically you're changing the culture of whoever your team is, or whoever your army is. And
this is a good game for groups that tend to game together often.
Yes.
This is not, to me, a party Risk.
It's not, or it could be.
It could be, I think, when you finish your actual.
It could be like an annual type thing where it's like once a year, almost. It's like you had, think of it like where you had a war, and then, like, years have passed, and then you come back, and it's like, oh shit, another war's begun.
I mean, it is how, like, life is.
Yeah.
Know? Like, look at the borders we have now. They're mostly set by World War II.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that, I guess, yeah, in that regard.
And so it's interesting to see, like, because, and again, you said if someone new comes in, it's almost like in real life where it's like, well, a new power has risen, and so they're, like, now trying for a play at the world or whatever. Interesting.
All right.
It's different, though, too, because what frustrates people is they don't know all the rules because they can't.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to. And an interesting thing is, what I read, is that all the games that are sent out and made, right, and produced in the factories, there are so many fucking different rules, and they're randomized in the packets.
Oh, see, I didn't know that. That's
so interesting. Everyone has a different game, and in the packets that you have to break the seal of, there's more stickers that you put on the board, and it keeps going and going. And, like, so one, like, it's not like where this box of Risk is identical to this box of Risk. Okay. It's all randomized.
See, I did not know that.
There's so many fucking combinations of different rules, and, like, that
it would be worth a shot,
I think. You were to finish one, like, 15 campaign, like, box,
yeah,
and then start a new box, it would probably be a whole different ballgame. Plus the fact that you have different variants of people making new decisions.
Yeah, and I'm aware that there are people that have multiple, like, copies of this version.
Yes.
Just because they want to see how different it can be.
It's an interesting, like, way to play it, like, how war.
See, you could easily do this in a video game, and that would be, like, eh, cool, whatever.
You could, but
like, I think for them to do this with a fucking board game is really cool.
I mean, you have to hand it to these, like, board game designers to even think of this concept alone. It's just like,
It's really easy to just say, like, Monopoly, just throw on fucking wrestlers, and that's a fucking version, yeah, by the way. Just put wrestlers on
this,
there.
This, though, it's like, yeah, like, let's make a board game. Like, that pitch, it must be, like, insane.
That must have, like, taken a lot of fucking balls.
But imagine
to, like,
hearing,
yeah,
that, like that what? Pitch, like, yeah, well, like, you must have, like, they must have been blown away hearing that pitch, like, what the fuck, like.
I heard originally it wasn't really meant to be released to people. It was just supposed to be like
that. The release of this is weird because, yeah, initially it was only released to, like, certain specialty stores.
Yeah.
It was more of, like, a passion project sort of thing. And, like, you know, like, game, like, those tabletop gaming type stores. Like,
yeah, I've been to a few. They're
released to those, very small batch. But the thing is, word spread on the internet, and, like Escapist, like, even did, like, a review on it, and, like, people started hearing more and more about it, and so they're like, let's just do a wide release of it. And they did, and it turned out especially on college campuses, to be really, really popular.
And yeah, because you have a group of people always there hanging out. That's why I would say it's not as good for like groups like what we do, is because every year or so we'll
But get I feel together. Like it could be.
It could be, yes.
It could be, but everyone's going to be too drunk and stoned.
But maybe that would help.
Oh my god. Well, I mean, the Revolutionary War, everyone was drunk, so.
Yes.
I mean, yeah.
Grant in Civil War was drunk as shit.
When you read about the Revolutionary War, the Founding Fathers were all fucking intoxicated, like, 24/7. They were always drunk. Like, that is so fucked up. And they're also killing children, but let's not talk about that. You know, firebombing schools and The Patriot is a movie that lies, by the way. It is not historically accurate.
Oh, no, I know that. I don't want to rant, but they kind of go into his bad shit, barely.
You want to hear a fun fact about history? The Revolutionary War, Americans were actually the bad guys.
That's not true.
We were... No.
We didn't want...
Actually, I shouldn't even say we. My ancestors weren't part of that.
No, that's true.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. No. I don't know.
Americans were the bad guys because the English were good and they weren't burning churches.
Sorry.
Yeah.
You lost.
Yeah, and the English were also like, you know, they abolished slavery before we did and like all this other good stuff. And
pretty much every country abolished slavery.
Yeah, America was the bad guy in the Revolutionary War.
No. So,
but Risk, you can be the bad guy too.
Risk is interesting in that there's no real good guy.
I wonder, has there been anyone who plays Risk and tries to act like very peaceful, like, hey guys.
Here's the thing, I feel like you would have to like...
There's no way you can play with it because you have
to. You have to make alliances and you have to be willing to protect the little guy versus the fucking invading empire that wants to conquer everything.
Yes.
That sounds kind of cool in concept, but I don't think people would like it.
No. Because the idea is essentially you're trying to create a one world government.
Yeah.
Owned by
Hulk Hogan.
Kevin
Nash and Scott.
So board game culture. We talked a little bit about it, is weird.
I mean, every fandom is weird.
Yeah, okay. I get fandoms for TV shows, for video games. It just... Board games, there's something really dorky about them, but not...
It is one of the nerdier, nerd passions, I would
like,
say.
I understand fandoms around, like D&D. Mm-hmm. Around, like...
There's a Doctor Who Risk,
yeah, by the way. I missed that. But, like...
I didn't hear you say
that. Around, what's it called? Tabletop games. I get that. Board games are weird because it's...
Like, I mean, they are tabletop
but games. But the thing about board games is they have this very, like, schmaltzy, like, very, like, oh, kids, we're playing a board game night. It's very, like, milquetoast.
Here's the thing. If you're only playing Monopoly, like, yeah, I get it. Risk is the most...
But there's a culture around Monopoly, too.
Yes, I know. That's weird.
They call themselves hardcore gamers. They call themselves gamers. They don't call themselves board gamers. Like, I watch so many videos of, like, you know, if you're a hardcore gamer like me, and I'm just thinking, like, what? Like, you're not a...
But, I mean, like, I get it, though. Like, because I've been to, like, these brick and mortar tabletop game stores and
get that.
It was interesting to me, like, seeing them go and, like, oh, look, here's the expansion to, like...
See, I get it because these are specialty things, but with, like, Risk and all these games...
Does Risk seem weird because it's a widespread game?
Even you buy a Target. That's,
is that what makes it weird?
I think that's what it is when it's, like...
Because, like, with, like, Cards Against Humanity, that's, like... That's just people just making, like, shitty jokes. There's a small culture.
I want to come in a nun. Like, things like that. Yeah.
So, like...
While a priest shits in a bucket of mid filth or something.
Something like that, yeah. Like, the thing about that is, like, there's a small culture to it, but I wouldn't say it's, like... But like it's simple. Play your cards.
There are board game forums where people take the shit super seriously, and it's interesting to see. There's a meme culture they've developed. Mm. they view other people as plebs if they're not like on the up and up. Like it's and there's conventions. They have conventions and they meet up. And
see, the thing that weirds me out is like the very exclusivity that people like want to put on these things. Like
come it's on. They're gamers before games were a thing. Before video games were a thing.
I guess, yeah.
So it makes me think before video
games. Are the Stranger Kids things gonna grow up to be like fucking dicks?
Are the Stranger Things kids? Wait, what?
Are like the are actual the
Stranger Kids things you said.
Stranger Things kids. Are they gonna grow up to be like?
Oh no, I don't.
Not the actual actors, but the characters.
No, they deal with real monsters. I don't think. I think they're probably gonna get tired of D&D.
You know what? That's true.
But it's weird seeing like wow. So like this sort of culture. Like I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying it's weird.
It's interesting to me. I find it interesting.
Yeah, by weird I mean interesting that it's like this shit can pop up even in this type of
yeah.
Like because. The whole tabletop D&D thing, there are stores catered to that. Monopoly and, games, no. There's no specialty stores, like, for Risk or not, like, for standard board games. Like,
you have your startups and all that.
They might sell them at, like, Wizards of the Coast or whatever, those types of places. But it's not like we have an entire brick and mortar, like, chain dedicated to Sorry and like, Stratego. And whatever.
Yeah, because that one I went to, it's in Fullerton or Anaheim. Yeah. I don't remember exactly, but like they were like they weren't selling. They sold Cards Against Humanity, and yeah. I think that was the most mainstream thing they sold there.
Yeah, I mean it's just a thing you don't really hear about often. Is that people just they celebrate these games to the point where it's like
because like I thought. Like I said, the Seinfeld episode was the weirdest you could be about Risk.
But no, people are...
And I don't mean weird in a bad way.
There's apparently a website where you can play it. It's an online version.
They have online versions of Risk,
they have clones, but there's, like, the one that's approved, apparently there's, like, over 500 different ways to play it or something. I forgot the name of the website, but...
And you have mobile Risk.
But then, of course, you have the purists who say you can only play it on the board... Pierce, so you can only play this version of it, that all the licensed ones are trash, that all the expansive ones are trash, that, like, variants are trash.
Yeah.
Some people say the European version is the most superior. Some people say North America. Like, it's nuts. Well,
I mean, yeah. Huh.
I mean, I honestly...
I heard the Westeros version, the Game of Thrones version, is not that good.
There's, yeah.
I hear that every version that comes out has a flaw.
Yeah, I mean, you could argue that about normal Risk also.
Yeah. I would like to try some of these licensed...
I honestly think Risk Legacy is the one for me. The way
that
it sounds...
That does sound really cool,
It just sounds like... Or Godstorm.
That sounds fucking awesome.
Like, that sounds really cool. But what's
interesting... I want to try this 2210 Nolan also.
See,
I
mean, what's interesting, though, is they sound really cool, but then when you... When you talk about Risk, it sounds so awesome. But when you play it, it's like there's lots of just
not it, doing it does it. Get kind of tedious, and then you're waiting for some guy to say, oh no, I'm going to move my troops now. And you're like,
And then you get pissed off because it's like, I thought we had an alliance. Or then you get mad because this person you have an alliance with did something fucking stupid.
Oh, he took the one country that you needed to have.
Or they made an attack that backfired, and now it's like, what? What?
Or someone's going to say, oh, I got to go mid-game while you're...
Yeah, well, there's always like, hey, I'm telling you, don't attack that. Oh, I'm just going to do it. It's fine. And it's like, we have an alliance. You need to agree with... Like, we need to...
Yeah, like we should have some understanding here.
Because an alliance means you're like the Axis power or the Allied... I don't know why I always say the Axis powers.
Because to me, it's like... When I think of the Allied powers, it's like... It seems like, okay, like, everyone just team up against these three dudes. Whereas the Axis powers to me felt like a coordinated team.
An actual coalition
of like, two big bad guys and one whatever guy.
Wait, are we saying Italy's the big... Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
Okay, we're saying
yeah. Italy. And then, like, it's like, okay, we have to... I'm going to do this thing here. You go that way. You go down south. And it's like, all right, we have a fucking plan here. And then everyone gangs up on them, and then they lose.
I wonder if for World War II vets, like, the ones who just, like, went to Italy and, like, killed some Italians. It sounds exciting.
Yeah, I mean, war is war.
No, but I'm saying, like, bragging about, like, killing Nazis.
I think my understanding is most of them that fought in Italy did eventually, like, go to, like, your, like...
So they eventually got to kill Nazis.
I guess, yeah.
Because you can't really, like... Oh, so you're killing Nazis? No, you know, some Italians. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I killed 50 men. Like,
World War II is interesting.
Yeah, it is.
That's why there's so many documentaries about it.
That's why a lot of these, I wouldn't call them knockoff games, but these spiritual successors or what have you, are based on World War II. It's a very interesting
time. I mean, I'd like to see a Civil War version.
There is one. Not of Risk, but there's a...
Of Risk, I want to see a Civil War version. I don't know how that would work.
You would just have territories and stuff.
I mean, yeah. I mean, you can do it on pretty much any war.
The thing is, like, a lot of these, like, Risk games, like, they have to split up the actual teams. Like, there's a Walking Dead version where it's like, okay, like, how many teams could you realistically have?
Like, there needs to be an American one. Like, it's alternate history where it starts off, like, the 13 colonies established.
Yeah.
But make it, like,
the colonies
Risk Legacy.
Yeah.
Where it's, like, alternate history of how, like, America got taken over. Mm. How you conquested, like...
Okay.
Or, I don't know. Like, one side is England... You have an English army, you have...
Your French,
Spanish...
Yeah.
And, you know,
colonists. Yeah, okay, cool.
I mean, that'd be interesting.
Yeah.
And then natives.
Yeah.
And like, see, I like to play as the natives, and it's like, you
rewrite history to your own path.
But then you could also, like, have, like... Because Mexico, that part's involved, and it's like,
That'd
be fucking crazy. The Germans in there.
Russians, too, actually.
Yeah. See, but then you get to the point where people say, you're just wrong and insensitive, and it's like...
And I would understand that, so...
But then it's like... Because they have historical ones where you're German and stuff, but then you never play as the Nazis, I guess.
No, you only play as the... Because I looked at the Axis and Allies...
Oh, you don't play as...
No. What I was saying, though, was like... I looked at the Axis and Allies, like, the front, the cover of it.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, it's Hirohito, it's Roosevelt, where's Hitler?
That was kind of weird. I was like, hmm. So, I have a few comments.
I do, too.
But the problem is most of them were
just Seinfeld jokes.
Yeah.
Which, again... Is a funny episode. It's a good episode.
So yeah, I'm just gonna read like four or whatever. Because all right. So it's Monopoly on steroids. That makes no sense.
I don't get that. Maybe in the sense that it's a game that people play
and takes forever.
Yeah, I don't know. All right. When can we play as Antarctica? Santa Claus needs to pillage and plunder that ass.
Wait, Santa Claus from the North Pole.
I know.
Do they not?
Nope. Doesn't seem like it.
Oh, there's flat, so you know.
Yeah.
God damn it. Alright, let's see. The thing I love about Risk is that no one realizes how impractical it would be to rule the entire planet.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean...
Well,
have so many needs.
A good example of this is Alexander the Great. When he had... At one point, he had so much fucking territory, he needed to put other people in charge of the different territory because he's realizing, like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
But then again, it's like a one-world... Because if we were part of, like, a planetary system, I don't know.
But you would still need leaders that could cater to each individual.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know, but yeah, that's...
Okay. My dick is worth 100 soldiers. But my wife's boyfriend is probably worth 300. Oh. It's a good thing he never plays Risk when he comes over.
Yep, that's a cut comment. That's cool. Jesus Christ. In Iraq, during my first tour there, my NCO actually set a guard on the game while we slept. It turns out everyone who was playing the game attempted to bribe the guard to move pieces. The game lasted for 2 months. So I mean,
that's why people have to take photos.
Yeah, imagine being bored out there, like, I mean, because like a lot of stories of people who like served in Iraq, like, there's areas where you're just like not doing shit.
Yeah, like Jarhead.
If you've ever seen Jarhead,
yeah,
not the sequels where they're action films.
No, they actually did that.
All the sequels are action movies. That's bullshit. The first one's just like nothing's happening.
There's some action scenes, but. Yeah, this game has ruined friendships and destroyed lives. It's truly the best. I do have to consider, though, a game that can go that far to piss people off must be doing something right.
I mean, I feel like games do this in general. Like, like, fighting games do this shit.
Yeah.
People get mad.
I would say that, like, you're invested, at least.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not a good thing to be angry at everything.
Yeah, that's true.
But I could say that the game has your interest enough to put your emotion into it, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. Okay. Like any mainstream board game, the easy-to-understand rules inspire to adapt and add own rules and settings. Thus, if your yardstick for a good game is illicit creativity, Risk is a good game. And then they added that it's actually a shitty game.
Well,
it's if you want creativity. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. I have one more. What's your final one?
Why haven't they made a Risky Business edition of Risk?
It's so fucking stupid. God damn.
That is dumb.
And the final. This comes from an esteemed gentleman, a lay tip your fedora fam sort of guy.
He must have a strong opinion about this.
My proudest moment was a day at work, Christmas Eve, in fact, where we basically just had an office party. I had taken one of my copies of Risk to work, and I had challenged five other people to a game of total world domination. I mopped them up in 90 minutes, targeting one enemy at a time, so I could seize their cards and field massive reinforcements. They never challenged me again. No one hung out with me anyway. So I had nothing to lose.
It's embarrassing. See, like, the thing is, he's very happy with himself. I bet you all those people are like, okay, whatever. Like, oh no, I lost at Risk. Like, okay. What the fuck? It's embarrassing. That's Risk, I guess.